This episode of No Quarter is sponsored by the Underground Retrocade. You love these games, and the way you want to play them is on the original cabinets. You want to see the side art, you want to feel the controls, and you want to hear Whitesnake on the stereo. So the next time you're in the Chicago area, visit the Underground Retrocade, where while you're standing in front of those machines, you may ask yourself, is this love? And the answer is yes. The Underground Retrocade, 121 West Main Street, West Dundee, Illinois. I'm Rob O'Hara.
And I'm Mike McGinnis.
And welcome to No Quarter, the podcast in which we talk about, well, lately we've talked about good arcade games. We've had a pretty good run.
We have? I thought the most recent was, what, Wall Street? And before that was...
Okay, that was a terrible one.
Something else. There was something else equally bad before that. I mean, we did have a couple of really good ones, and then some not so good ones. This week is good. I like this one. I like this one a lot.
Yeah, it was good. It was not my favorite that we've played on the show, but it was good. And you know what? Maybe it's like those, what do they say with nostalgia? It's rose-colored, rose-tinted glasses. Rose-tinted, so right. Afterwards, I'm like, oh, remember how good that Wall Street game was, Mike?
Well, I was going to say in comparison to Wall Street, probably anything looks good.
So. That's true. That is a good point. So, well, man, what have you been up to since we last recorded?
Not a whole lot. Hiding out from the summer sun. It's been in the 90s and blue skies and birds singing and people running around and having a good time in summer. So naturally, I hate it and try to avoid that. What about you?
Well, I just got back from vacation, and I know that last time we recorded, I'd also just got back from vacation. So apparently,
government workers get a lot of vacation.
I know that's all I do these days. Now, my wife had a work trip down to Fort Worth. It was like they said, what's someplace hotter than Oklahoma in the summer? Oh, I know, Texas. Let's go further south. So she went down there, and then I just ended up taking the week off and going down there with her. So, it was a good time off. I actually took my Raspberry Pi with me. And all you need to hook it up to a TV, you know, is HDMI. And I was betting, and I was right, that the room we stayed in would have a TV with HDMI spare, you know, HDMI input. So I just ran my cable, plugged that in, and booted up and had all my MAME games, all my emulators all set up on the Pi. So that was
awesome.
It's more of an experiment. I mean, I could do it on my laptop or something, I suppose, too. But I wanted to see... Oh, that worked out. So I spent some time doing that. And let's see, what else did we do? Oh, I went to Barcadia.
Oh, okay. How'd that go?
In Fort Worth. Now, I have been to the Barcadia in New Orleans, and I didn't realize, I guess this is a chain or at least a franchise because they're set up almost, I mean, they look very similar inside. And so, and I guess there are several Barcadias. So here's my experience, and maybe I hit him on a bad night. I don't know. But we walked up, and there was about 15 arcade machines there. So I thought there would be more, but you know, maybe we're kind of jaded at this point where you're like, oh, there's only 15 classic arcade games, you know.
Wow, what's the matter with you?
Right. And the first one is Donkey Kong. So I was like, oh, that's cool. So I'm looking around to get some change. And then I see a sign that says Tuesday night is free game night. So all the machines were free. They all had, credits already on them. So I thought, oh, this is good. So I walk up, I start playing Donkey Kong, and the joystick was like... kind of hard to, I don't know, what's a good way to describe it? It almost felt like an Atari 5200 joystick, if you've ever used one of those where it doesn't self-center, you know? So as I was moving right, I couldn't just press up. It was like maybe the springs inside there were worn out or something, so I had to move it back to the middle before moving up. I didn't do very good on Donkey Kong, so I looked around, and then I saw Tron Machine. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to go play some Tron. So I went over and played Tron, and the joystick on it was really weird. It was like, it was almost like you couldn't go eight ways, like eight directions. You could only go four ways. I mean, it was a Tron joystick, but I couldn't move diagonally. So I was having trouble. And, like when I was, you know, shooting the spiders and the MCP cone, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the joystick was kind of weird on that. So then I thought, well, right next to that was Paperboy. So I moved over to Paperboy, and Paperboy, I mean, I'll give them this one. That thing's got to be hard to maintain anyway with those giant, you know, you have the handlebars.
Oh, right, yeah.
On the front.
Crazy,
you know,
controls.
Yeah, and you push them forward to go faster and back to slow down, which is kind of key to playing the game.
Yep,
that's how
sure
you avoid, you know, the obstacles that come out at you. And pushing forward didn't do anything. So you're just moving along at this slow pace. So, which I found out, you know, the minute I got to the first crossroad, there's traffic coming across, you know, and I push forward to speed up and little Paperboy just goes do, 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 do. And then I get hit by a car.
Yep.
So that's all I played. I only played three machines and all three of them had issues. So I didn't play all 15. So maybe by chance I picked the three that had problems. I mean, that's a possibility. Or maybe I tend to think that people that go to the retro arcades, the dedicated ones that are out there, you know, like the Arcadia, the 1984, those type of places, that maybe those people have a little bit more respect for the machines than, say, you know, classic ones that you would put inside, with, you know, essentially a bar. And maybe they get torn up more. So, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they have to do more repairs, or maybe they don't care as much about upkeeping them. I really don't know. But, I mean, I went for the games and was a little disappointed. Everybody, all the employees were really nice, and the beer was good and all that. But the machines were a little beat up.
That's disappointing. You know, it's one thing if it's a laundromat or a pizza joint or something and it's got two games in the corner, you know. I get that those places have neither the time nor the resources, you know, to really do proper upkeep on the arcade games, and they're slowly just going to get worse and worse over the years. They can kind of do the minor fixes or adjustments if somebody who works there happens to know a little bit about the games, but for the most part, they're just going to be left alone. And if the screen gets cracked because somebody got mad and threw their beer at it, well, you know, that's just going to be cracked. But a place that's billing itself as an arcade, a retro arcade, to have games like that, it's kind of sad to see. I've only been to, I'm not sure I should tell this story, but I've been to a Fun Spot once.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of, Fun Spot is of course, kind of the mecca, I guess, for retro arcade gaming because of its, you know, its fame, its appearances in movies like King of Kong and things like that. And everybody who's claims to be into the hobby or whatever has to go there at least once and play. Well, I went there and I remember, and maybe it's just that they don't have a big back area. But there were a lot of broken games just out on the floor. I you know, the Spy Hunter game was unplayable because the controls were so messed up. And then we went down the road to, the PWA Pinball Wizard Arcade, which is, it's, I don't know, like an hour and a half or something down the road from Fun Spot, and the games were in perfect condition and well kept, and the area was there was nothing wrong with Fun Spot's facilities, and there wasn't with Pinball Wizards, but Pinball Wizard in the back, you could see that's where all the broken games were kept, away from like, just, they weren't eyesore sitting there. I remember specifically, in addition to the Spy Hunter problem I had, like, they had several of the Laserdisc games, Space Ace and Dragon's Lair, and a couple of others that were popular. And yeah, they're Laserdisc games, so they're crap, but you still want to at least play them once or twice on the real thing. And those were all broken, and it was just kind of a sad to see. So yeah, I get why a place that calls itself Barcadia, it would be disappointing when the first three games you walk up to and try to play have serious problems.
The first time I went to Fun Spot was with Jason Scott. He and I went up there, and that was right around the time, maybe a few months after King of Kong had come out. And so he and I decided that we were going to have our own King of Kong, or Donkey Kong, Kong off between the two of us.
Okay.
And so we went and found the Donkey Kong machine. And when we started playing, the graphics were messed up on it. And there were a few little glitches in the play field, but the biggest problem was that the barrels were invisible.
Oh, nice.
I don't know if you've ever tried to play Donkey Kong with invisible barrels, but I will tell you that I was the victor. I beat him 200 to 100, so, which was just by randomly jumping and somehow clearing two invisible barrels.
Now, if Billy Mitchell were there, he'd have set a new high score, even if he couldn't see the barrels.
He probably would have 300 us, but I don't know. It's got to be a maintenance nightmare. And you know what I've heard from some arcade owners, I had somebody tell me this a long time ago, was that a lot of times games that break on the floor remain broken because whenever you find a broken game, you don't normally go tell somebody, and the people that own it don't go try every game, so they don't have any idea that some of the machines are having issues. So maybe somebody should come up with good system. You know what I mean? Like something where maybe pieces of paper that you rip off and you're like, hey, this game doesn't jump or something, you know, like a suggestion box where you could drop those in or something, because I got a feeling. But, you know, when I was 100% of ones at that Barcadia, I got to figure somebody knows. Somebody knows that's an issue there. But
I was thinking as you were talking about like what could be done about that. And I thought, well, you know, maybe if you're a bar that powers the games down every night and turns them on every morning, wouldn't you notice then? But no, not necessarily, because a lot of the games, the code remains just fine. The chips are fine, but there's something wrong with the controller, you know, mm-hmm. or one mm-hmm. of the speakers is out, or the screen is a slight off color that you wouldn't notice until later on. So I get that. I remember at, I think it was the one up here in Denver, they had this Galaga machine where the ship was sort of stuck halfway up. Or I think maybe it was a bee that was stuck coming halfway down and you couldn't shoot it. Your shots went right through it. The collision detection didn't notice that you were hitting, that there was a bee there that was supposed to be hit.
Mm-hmm.
But another part of the code that kept track of how many bees are left on the play field before we move on to the next level when it gets to zero still counted that there was a bee there, and so you couldn't advance any further than that. You could shoot all day, but nothing else was going to happen. So, and they in that case, somebody was called over and they reset it, and it came right back up. So that game had other problems, and they were able to pull it off the floor and take it in the back. But yeah, usually those things just sit there until somebody complains loudly enough. And who's going to? I want my quarterback. Darn it! I 25 cents, and I want every penny. You know?
right. Yeah.
You go on to the next game, and or if you happen to think about it later, you might mention it. But chances are, it's going to sit through a lot of plays and people going, "Gee, this thing is broken," mm-hmm. and moving on.
So here's the deal. You and me, a new business venture, official arcade testers. We will fly around. Now, people have to pay to fly us around. They have to put us up.
Copyright, no quarter.
Right. And yeah, and they have to give us the quarters for the machines, too. We're not paying for that.
That's right.
And also food and what else? I need a limo that's painted like Pac-Man.
I need at least 3-star accommodations at a local hotel. Not a motel, a hotel.
Is that 3 out of 100? That's usually what we get. So that's what we will do. We'll go around the country and we will test your games. Actually, I don't like traveling that much, so you should just ship the cabinets to us.
Oh, there you go. Even better. Of course, this whole business idea is copyright, no quarter. So
exactly. No quarter game testing. Right.
If you go and start this, I'm going to come want my piece. I want my cut here.
Well, let's see what we have here on news. I jotted down a couple things for us. MAME 163 was just released. Now, if you have had MAME set up for a while, you probably know you can check the MAME webpage and see, you know, what has been changed on each version. So if it's not a major release, or if they haven't added like your favorite game or something, usually I don't upgrade. I don't know how often you upgrade the MAME on your machines.
I only do an upgrade if there's a ROM that I have that wasn't working and has been fixed, or improved in some way. Mm-hmm. It's just such a dicey thing to upgrade, because when you upgrade that core engine, I find that sometimes a lot of the games that were working stop because they've changed mm-hmm. how the emulation is done, and those ROMs have to be updated, and you might be waiting a couple of updates before they start working again, or you got to go back and hunt down, you know, they've taken some file out of the ROM zip, and you got to go hunt down that exact .bin or yeah. .dat. And it's, I generally don't do it, like I said, unless there's some, you know, major fix, or I've been waiting to play, you know, whatever game and it wasn't working before, and so the encryption's finally been cracked or something. But otherwise, you know, if it works, I don't mess with it.
Yeah, and I know a couple of releases ago, I guess they combined MAME and MESS.
Have you seen this? I think the code core originally, and I'm sure it will be corrected on this, but it originally was a common core, and then at some point they split out into MAME and MESS, and I think they're back together now. So.
Okay, yeah, that's because I see some different front ends and stuff now that where you can choose, you know, or run everything from one. I don't know. I'm like. You know, my dad used to make fun of me for a lot of reasons, actually. But one in particular was when we would go out to dinner. I would eat like all of one thing and then move my plate. And then all of what, like I would eat all my corn and then I would eat all my mashed potatoes.
What's wrong with that? I do that.
Yeah. I don't, because, you know. What if it's you don't want to mix the stuff like that,
it's
you
gross.
Know?
So that you gotta throw the whole thing away if that happens.
So that's how I like my emulation. I don't need my mess and my MAME. My MAME and my mess. Just put them all separate. If I have to have different machines, that's fine. I mean I get it on a computer, like your regular machine or something like that, but mm-hmm. I don't know. It just seems like it's getting bigger. And I did read that in the last two versions they're doing a bunch of work with shaders to try to make LCD screens look more like CRTs. Yeah. So I'm not interested in that enough to screw up my whole ROM set yet, but I would like to see, what kind of work they're doing on that.
For a number of years, they did they had these things called HLSL filters, I think. Is the correct nomenclature? I don't have it up in front of me, but it was basically a set of any files. If you're familiar with Windows, pretty much any configuration that you do in any program at one point or another used any files. Not all of them do anymore. Some do XML and stuff like that. But in MAME, like MAME 64 UI and things, you could go in and actually adjust haze and fuzziness and things so that asteroids on your CRT, on your LCD looked a lot closer to what you got in the arcade experience. The problem was, I guess they had updated the core and it was incompatible with some settings or the way that the HLSL filters were handled. And if you had it enabled and launched certain games, it would crash MAME, and they disabled it. They kept saying, "Oh, we're working on it. It'll come back," and it didn't. And I guess this is what they're doing instead.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Which is fine. It makes sense because just because of the way the you know, interacting with graphics on your computer works, this is a more, I guess, organic way to deal with the effects than through settings files.
Right. And there's, you know, people all the way on one end of the spectrum that don't care at all. I mean, you turn it on and you go, "Oh, it's asteroids," and you play, and that's fine. And then, you know, people all at the other end that will sit there and tweak and twist knobs and fiddle and change little settings or whatever. I'm probably somewhere in the middle. You know, it doesn't have to be. It's there, unless it's in a giant wooden box and people are putting quarters up on a marquee waiting for me to die, then it's never going to be fully authentic for me. So I kind of gave up that dream, you know, of making it like 100% authentic at home. But yeah, if there's little things I can do, really, it's all about if you make it something I could click on. If it's an option I can click on, I'll look at it. Otherwise, I'm all done. All right, let's see. HardcoreGaming101.net. I don't know if you follow that website, but they recently, it's HardcoreGaming101.
Mm-hmm.
And they posted a article recently about arcades and arcade cabinets that appear in other video games. So it's kind of meta.
Wow. Okay.
Right. But it's a huge list, you know. So anytime, like when there's an arcade game and then in the background you see other arcade games and stuff, they've gone through and taken screenshots and made all these lists. And it could just be like one machine in the background of a like in the window, you know, of a game, or all the way to like, you know, RPGs where you can go inside an arcade, but they've made this huge list with screenshots and all that stuff. And I had a really good time clicking through there. So I will throw that into the show notes. It's definitely fun to go through. And it's fun because some of the games in the background are like real machines, you know, and then some of them are obviously made up, you know, parodies or, you know, just generic kind of machines. So it's kind of fun to go through and look at all those.
Kotaku has an interesting article about the video game, the World Video Game Hall of Fame, which is now a thing run by the Strong Museum, the Strong National Museum of Play, which is beginning to earn its name as sort of a place of record for tracking video game achievements and unusual stuff. They have now the first class of inductees has been announced for induction into the World Video Game Hall of Fame. There were 15 nominees, and a lot of them are newer titles like Angry Birds and Doom and stuff like that. Which, okay, that makes sense. And there's some older ones on there that are more in line with what we talk about here, things like Pac-Man and Pong, and even, you know, Space Invaders and Sonic the Hedgehog and games like that. But the article on Kotaku is interesting because it takes the stance that it's the wrong Pac-Man that got nominated.
I've read this, yes.
Yes, they think, and I agree with them actually, that the game that should be in is Ms. Pac-Man. And the point is made here that people no longer play Pac-Man, much less Space Invaders, Donkey Kong, or, well, I don't think that's true. I don't think a lot of people play Donkey Kong, but a lot more people play Ms. Pac-Man than Pac-Man. It's the action is better. It's a little bit harder. The game, I think, overall is just better because it is an iteration and an improvement on the original Pac-Man. And when you go into most, you know, full arcades, obviously we'll have both, but if you go into a laundromat, or a pizza joint or whatever, those places are, if they're going to have a maze game, it's going to be Ms. Pac-Man, not Pac-Man.
Yeah, to me, when I saw that they had inducted Pac-Man, I thought of it more as a symbolic thing. Like that, for me, that was the Pac-Man franchise, you know? I mean, that encompasses all the things that came out of Pac-Man, like the TV show and the cereal and the memorabilia and the huge Pac-Man craze and Ms. Pac-Man. Like, those things are all
true,
included in that. So I didn't think of it as a slight.
The origin of the species.
Yeah, exactly. So there a category in that for the best video game podcast?
There should be, and it should be us, darn it.
Next. Next story.
We should be the only and continuous inductee every year. There's a best video game podcast, and it should always be No Quarter and no one else.
And it should be...
Of course we kid. We kid.
Right, but really, we would get voted out by Miss No Quarter.
That's right.
lost again.
Darn it.
Mr. Eyelashes.
That was those darn 8-bit feminists.
They get us every time. speaking of, I'm going to bring it all back together here for you. World Records and FunSpot and Donkey Kong. Three things we've already mentioned.
Listen to you.
Robbie Lakeman just set the new world record for Donkey Kong, 1,158,400,
okay,
which beats the last record by 13,600 points by Robbie Lakeman. And he beat the previous record by Robbie Lakeman. So he has won the last three. He's pushing the score. He said it the last three times.
Yeah, and I think you'll notice that, you know, as these new records are set, they're starting to inch their way up rather than leaps and bounds. And we talked about this. Carrington and I talked about this on a previous episode, but we can talk about it here too. Is that there's an article, I don't have it in front of me, about the reaching the theoretical score limit in Donkey Kong because of the kill screen, where there are only so many barrels that you can jump and so many hammers that you can swing and prizes that you can collect for a maximum point, a maximum score in a Donkey Kong game. And it seems like we're probably approaching that. I don't know if the math was completed to finish. This is the hard limit on how many points you could get in a game. But I'm sure that we're quickly approaching that.
Yeah, I've read that it's somewhere in the 1.2 million range is a theoretical limit, and this is a 1.1. In fact, there's a very select group of guys that get to that 1.1 million sure. range, which I thought was great because it was 1,158,000, and I thought if you took the 1 million off, that would probably be my best game ever. just the 158,000 would be a really, really good game for me.
And what I'm seeing now is more the other challenges that you have, like how quickly can you get to a kill screen and mm-hmm. and how many times can you kill screen in a weekend? I remember when back in at the Denver Comic Con, I think it was 2013, Steve Wiebe was out here and they had a game and Richie Knuckles came out and he basically had promised that Steve would get a kill screen before he left this weekend.
Oh, wow.
And he did it with like, they were like, we got to go in 10 minutes because he's got a plane to catch. And he did it right at the time limit. So that was kind of cool as far as the tension and things like that. But that seems to be more of a challenge these days than like what score can I get? Because mm-hmm. again, when you're talking increments of 10 or 20 points, yeah, the real super hardcore top of the, you know, 1% of the 1%, that can even get that close. They're the ones who are going to geek out on that. And the rest of us are going to go 10 points, whatever.
Right. Right. Well, it's funny you mentioned Richie Knuckles, and Donkey Kong, because the Kong Off 4, now I know this breaks no quarter tradition in announcing things before they've already happened.
That's right.
So I hate to do that. I should sit on this until mid-August. But the Kong Off 4 is going to take place at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Richie Knuckles is again hosting, and it is part of the Replay FX Arcade and Gaming Festival.
Oh, good.
That is July 30th through August 2nd. They are going to have over 700 arcade and pinball machines, and that includes 22 Donkey Kong machines, two of them, wow, which it says are reserved for Billy Mitchell and Steve Wiebe. But the other 20 entrants, I guess there are, like they do 10 from the national rankings and 10 for, you know, like you can go and compete and try to qualify for there.
Yeah, that's been the common theme with this over the years, is there are certain people who get invited because their scores are at a certain level and they have a bit of celebrity and you want them there. And the rest, you know, tend to be people who are up and coming and they're competing in leagues and stuff. So I think that's actually kind of a neat idea to do it that way. I know that,
you know, somebody's having a good weekend or a bad weekend or whatever, you know, it adds a little, I guess, excitement to it. Sure.
It's good to hear that this is happening again. I know things went really kind of sideways for Richie after the Kong Off here in Denver, and he wasn't sure if it was ever going to happen again. So it sounds like he's gotten some stuff together and is back on track, and that's great.
Yep. So if you want to find out, and we would love if we have any listeners up in that area that are going to go to get some pictures and some reports and, you know, and also we're going to get some business cards printed up for our video game testing service, if you want to pass those around. you know, maybe you can meet these guys. Well, you know, we got to get some no quarter t-shirts and get people to wear them around or something. We'll see what we can get together.
It's been a long time since we've done a contest or giveaway, so maybe we'll do some t-shirts or something.
That'd be cool. But that was July 30th through August 2nd, and if you want to find out more about that, you can go to replayfx.com or kongoff.com. You know who's not going to be invited to that, and this is my last news story for you.
You?
Maybe he will be. No, I'm going to be a guest of honor. Are you crazy? It's The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. He's going to be busy filming his brand new movie, Rampage, based on the arcade game. Have you read this?
I saw something about this. Yes, I did. And in fact, we way back when interviewed Brian Colon, I think is how it's pronounced,
mm-hmm.
Who created Rampage on this very show. So you should go back and listen to that interview before you go see the movie.
So I think what happened, and this is the only logical thing, is that Dwayne The Rock Johnson was listening to No Quarter, and he heard that interview and said, do you smell this movie that I'm cooking or whatever?
I wish so much that we had a connection to him because we could get him to record something like that because that'd be awesome.
So I'm sure this comes out of this stupid Adam Sandler Pixels movie, you know, and they're like, this is going to take off so well. People love retro stuff and they love retro arcade games and they love Pac-Man and Donkey Kong. So
apparently they love Adam Sandler. I don't know why.
Right. So, what makes more sense than to have the rock star in the big screen adaptation of Rampage? And I got to tell you, first of all, I don't even know where to begin. It's so stupid. And it's not even worth discussing really, but of all the retro arcade franchises, I can think of so many that would lend themselves better. What about a Wall Street movie? They had a Wall Street movie, but they cut out, that's in the deleted scenes, the scene where all the Wall Street guys were jumping out of the building and being.
They actually did have an adaptation of that. It starred Nicolas Cage and it was called Bringing Out the Dead. And it was this bleak, endless movie one depressing story after the next of him working an ambulance shift late at night. And it felt like playing Wall Street.
If you think of the simplest game, like Pong, if Hollywood thought they could make a dollar, we're going to make the Pong movie.
They made a battleship movie.
That's true. That's true. So, it's like when you say a movie based on Rampage starring The Rock, immediately the entire movie unfolds right before your eyes. You know what I mean? You're like, okay, it's him. And I bet, they've got someone makes the serum that turns the people into monsters and he's going to have to show up and fight the monster. I mean, you already know the whole plot of the stupid movie. So how much is a movie ticket? $15 now? I'm just going to get $15 worth of quarters and just go play Rampage. That's my silent protest when that comes out. I'm going to dress up like The Rock and just go play Rampage. So, oh, gosh.
One last news item here. If you live in Azusa, California, I have bad news for you. Mike Watson, owner of Super Arcade, was trying to obtain a business license to open a new expansion in the city of Azusa, California, and they said no, his permit was denied based on claims that the arcade would bring crime, a lower quality of life for the city, and other similar complaints, which, man, that sounds like what they said about arcades back in the 80s.
I feel like our podcast brings a lower quality of life already, so well, I don't know that he would be making it worse, but remember in the 80s where people, that was like the stigma, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. All these arcades, they're dark, dingy, drug dealers. Yeah. And then it wasn't like that. I mean, not the arcades around here. Like when you went, it was, I don't know, pretty well lit and kids having fun. And
so eventhubs.com has an article with that news and also a brief interview that's pretty depressing and bleak with the owner, Mike Watson. But if you want to read a little bit more about that, we'll have a link in the show notes.
Wow. He needs to get The Rock out there.
That's right.
Just go beat those people up.
Well, I think The Rock could probably just punch a building over if he wanted to. So, I'm sure that he's just having him stand there would be pretty imposing and threatening.
Wow. Well, we did get some feedback over the last few episodes. We are so far into this show, I'm going to breeze through these really, okay, really fast. I'm going to hit the highlights. We got an email from Edward Smith, who has been creating games that you can run actually on the Motorola. I guess you have to use the emulator, but he's writing these in assembly code. He said he was inspired after hearing the show to actually come up with arcade style games in assembly. So I don't think he's distributing them publicly yet. I'm not sure, but if he does, then we'll add a link to that. But that's really cool. I mean, programming on that level, know what I mean? I don't know. I got some colors to change one time in BASIC. That's about it. So that's a cool post. Great. We got feedback from Andrew Haney, who correctly guessed this week's episode or this week's game, which is Pingo. He said that he played this game in Spain when he was on vacation in 84. And we'll talk a little bit about this in the episode, but there are different versions that play different music. Mm-hmm. So he remembered it playing one song, and then when he found it in MAME, that it had the different version. And then he said he owned the board set for Pingo when he had a cab, and actually hacked Pac-Man ROM code to run on that board. So he needs to get with Edward.
Yeah,
these guys can put together a project, and then we will test the buttons. That's
that'll be part of our new business too. We'll also test your new arcade game.
We got feedback from Wade Palmer, who also guessed that this game, this week's game, was Pingo. I guess that music is pretty recognizable if you're a fan of this game. And he threw in some comments. We talked about front ends for MAME and for arcade stuff, and he uses Mala. It's M-A-L-A. And that's also a pretty popular one, which we didn't mention. And it's one of the selling points for it is that it's really flexible and that you could put a lot of different emulators and stuff in there. So I got a feeling people are going to start doing that more now with MAME and MES recombined, you know, that people will start putting, I mean, people do it anyway, but I guess it just makes it easier with one executable.
Yeah, it makes sense.
We got, I really like this email. We got it from Jan Winslaff Egbert. And he... Yawn? Oh, it probably is. Well, I haven't, you have to pronounce the names. You know what we need to do is use one of those computer voices.
So then
we
the Macintosh, the old Macintosh.
Exactly. So he says he was inspired by an old episode to create his own MAME machine. But this is what I really like about this. It says, being in the lucky position to have access to the recycling storage of an IT service provider, his goal was to build a machine just from scraps. In the end, he says he had to pay for a sheet of wood for the sides, a couple of arcade buttons and joysticks, and some screws. But from the recycling center, he used the PC motherboard, a broken LCD monitor that he repaired. He reused the controller chip from an old USB keyboard and wired it to the controls. And then he sent a bunch of pictures, and this is really cool. I mean, I like that, you know, reusing the old stuff and putting it together, and he's got some pictures of it, you know, playing the machines and stuff like that. So this is really cool feedback. I really like this one. It's amazing that my MAME machine, all it's lacking is me to go out and work on it, and I will use a credit card to buy every part. I don't even care. And he's done so much more with stuff that he got out of a recycling center than I've been willing to do on mine. So, but yeah, this is a really cool one. Let's see. Oh, I forgot to mention this. This is a separate email from Andrew Haney I just mentioned. And he sent us a link to a project he recently did that he posted on Instructables. And he took a digital watch, reprogrammed the chips that go into it, and made it basically display Pong. Did you see this email?
I did. Yeah, this is fascinating.
Yeah, so it basically keeps, it shows on the little LCD screen a game of Pong going on, and then it keeps time with the score. So each time a minute goes by, the right side scores, and the score goes up to keep track of the minutes, and then once an hour. So if you're on the left, you only win once an hour. but it goes up and keeps track of the hours. I just thought this is amazing. Again, this is it's under that same umbrella of taking old stuff and repurposing it, reprogramming it, you know. And I just thought this one was really cool.
That's very good.
Let's see. We talked about that. We talked about this. All right. I think we're done. Okay. If I forgot anybody, I'll put them in the next show. But I think this is everything. So, but golly, it's 35 minutes. What game did we play this week, Mr. McGinnis?
Mr. O'Hara, we played Pingo, the 1982 arcade hit by Sega.
Pingo is a penguin, and he swaggers his way through an ice block field, avoiding the snow bees, crumbling ice blocks in his way, and trying to line up the three diamond blocks in a row for big points. He can score extra points by freezing a bee against a wall, or crumbling the flashing blocks where the snow bee eggs are hatching. Or Pingo can stop a snow bee with an ice block. The whimsical Pingo, master of the ice.
Thank you, Kevin, and stay out of the refrigerator. Okay, Steve, you picked Pingo first off. Why Pingo?
Well, it's the best game here. I can play this one the best.
You can play the best, so you figured to get as much score at the beginning as you can. Good strategy. We'll see how you play, and if it's your best game, I can't give you many hints, but remember, you can kick the wall and freeze those snow bees on the wall and run over and get some points, okay?
Okay.
All right, you'll have 50 seconds from the time I say go. Ready? Get set. Go.
I was just there searching for a type of game to call this. And I guess that if I had to call it, pick a name, it would be, I guess I would call it an obstacle slider, obstacle mover, maybe. There's a couple of games similar to this that sort of feature that you slide pieces of the maze around, or you move parts of the to reconfigure how you move and how you kill and the monsters, and you're chasing them by trapping them and crushing them even as they're coming after you. And there's Pengo and there's Eyes. And there's even a game like Ladybug where the maze walls are fixed, but you have those little turnstiles so you can reconfigure how the maze looks and you can get around in there. There's definitely a lot of strategy to these types of games. I don't know if this is my favorite, but I had a good time playing it.
So,
is this going to be our first disagreement, Rob?
I think it is, because I. So here's the thing. I don't have any history with Pengo. I didn't play it as a kid. I've seen it before and tried to play it and never really knew what was going on. So now that I've spent the last 2 weeks playing it, I'm still not entirely sure what's going on. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. It reminds me, in a way, it reminds me of, I think it was it Super Pac-Man? Where you open the little doors and the doors open and close, and it changed the maze, or almost like Mappy, where it's the same type of thing where you can close and open the doors. And so you're doing the same thing. You're modifying. It's like a maze game, a modifiable maze game.
That ugly game where you could become huge and, yeah. And suddenly Pac-Man's like laying across other
elements. Yeah, you just go through everything, game, right? Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting game. Like you said, you can actually modify the maze as you're playing.
Well, so you've got games like Pac-Man, Ms. Pac-Man, where the maze itself is completely fixed, and it's up to you to navigate your way through and survive without being able to change any of that. And then you've got games like Ladybug, where parts of the maze are fixed and other parts can be reconfigured, and Super Pac-Man is like that as well. And then Pengo is a game where everything on the maze I think they describe it as a completely destructible environment. So you can move everything around on the maze and all of the blocks can be destroyed, which can, if you're like me, can be a frustrating experience, or if you're good at sort of planning that sort of thing, can probably be pretty rewarding. I guess real quick here, the premise of the game is that you play this little red penguin, and he's trapped on this maze of ice, and you have these blob-shaped snow bees things that are coming after you, and Pengo has to avoid and defeat the snow bees by moving these blocks of ice around, and there's also diamond blocks that we'll talk about in a minute, and you can either crush the snow bees I think that's the only, you have to crush the snow bees with the ice blocks, and you can destroy the ice blocks yourself. And as you continue, there are more snow bees that hatch and come after you. And eventually, and that's pretty much it. And the level ends when you've defeated all the snow bees on the board. And then it starts over and they're more and faster. And eventually you get overwhelmed, which for me came really quickly, but there's definitely a strategy, I think, to understanding how the snow bees chase you, because like I would try to line up these neat like block moves and stuff, and they would go, oh no, I'm going around this way, and then I would be trapped all of a sudden, and oh look, I've trapped myself in the corner and I can't get out and I'm dead.
Yeah. You can also knock them over. I don't know if you did this. You wiggle the wall.
Forgot about that, yep.
Yeah, so you can do that. But when you do that, they keep moving for a little bit, and then will still kill you. So I found that if you wait till they're like right next to you, like if they're right behind you, and you try to do that, you'll kind of flip them over, but they will still slide into you and kill you. So you have to plan that out a little bit. Now the goal to get past each level is to clear all the snow bees. There's also this secondary goal. And I need a word for this. It's like a distracting goal where there are three, are they diamond cubes?
Yeah, they're diamond cubes.
Okay. And so you can earn points by getting all three of these, lining them up on the level as well. So I found that when I couldn't do both. if I worried about doing those, the snowbees killed me. And if I, you know, focused on killing the snowbees, I never had time to move the diamond blocks around.
Yeah, so the diamond blocks are movable like everything else on the playfield, but they are indestructible. And as you discovered, Rob, when you line them up, not only do you get a huge bonus, you get a lot of bonus points for doing that, but it stuns all the snowbees on the screen for a little bit.
Well, I think I only did it once in 2 weeks, so I wouldn't.
That's definitely a challenge. Yes.
Yeah, and when you're doing that, like I said, then the snowbees would just come after me and would kill me. So,
and we had mentioned that the eggs will hatch more snowbees as you continue to play, but you can slow that down or stop that by shattering an ice block with an egg in it, so that there are less enemies coming at you.
You can also smash the ice cubes if you run into them, and then you just, if it's already up against something. But I felt like the ice cubes were the only remote thing helping me. So smashing them seemed to not be helping my cause.
You want to be judicious with that function, because as you're destroying these ice cubes, so are the snowbees. The snowbees are not necessarily trapped in the open areas of the maze. They can, I don't think they can move the blocks, but they can certainly chew their way through them to get to you.
One thing that I thought was interesting, a comparison that I had between this and Dig Dug, was at the beginning of the level, you have this little set maze to go through, but the more that you play, you move the ice blocks around, you destroy ice blocks, the snowbees destroy ice blocks, and so they are making less areas for you to hide in, or for them to, you know, be restricted to. And it just kind of reminded me of Dig Dug, where, you know, when you start a level of Dig Dug, you're creating this little path, and you open up this area to try to kill this guy or to leave these guys to get smashed by a rock. But if you die, you restart on that same level, but all the damage to the dirt that you've done is still there. So before, where monsters may have been restricted to areas, now they could just start, you know, piling in behind you. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of the same thing, where if I didn't, you know, beat the level relatively quickly, you know, if I died and then I went to my second man, so much of the ice blocks had been destroyed that the guys would just come running after me.
Right. There's nowhere to hide.
Right.
Well, and the other thing that you have to keep in mind as you're playing now, a lot of games feature sort of the time bonus, where the faster you clear a level or complete a task or overcome an obstacle, the more bonus points you get. And Pengo works the same way, where the faster you clear the board and move on to the next one, the bigger bonus you get at the end of the level. There's no indication on the screen at the time that as you're playing that shows you how long the game thinks you've been playing, so you don't really know. I mean, you can kind of get an idea that, yeah, I cleared that one faster, or no, that took longer than it should have. You'll get a screen after the level that shows exactly which bonus range you fell into. But I find that not having a timer on the screen kind of, the games that do have those really ramp up the tension well when with those, because not only are you competing with whatever monsters are on the screen, but you also have a counter going. And if you can't see that, it's easier not to think about it until you get a nice surprise bonus at the end, I guess. But I think I would rather have had the counter there where I could see it and to build the tension up as I'm playing through the levels.
Yeah, there were a lot of Sega games at the time that had that exact same screen. When I first saw that, I thought, oh, it looks just like Moon Patrol. And Up and Down, which is a game I really liked at the time. They both had that exact same...
I think Flicky did too.
Yeah, so I suppose if you're better at this game than I am, which would be just about everybody in the third world, you would know, like, okay, is it more, like, point-wise, is it more beneficial for me to, you know, putz around and try to trap this last guy or move these diamonds around, or is it better for me to finish the level early and try to get those bonus points? You know what I mean? Like, you know, if I do everything real fast and I only get 500 points, well, it wasn't worth it.
I think that a lot of it has to do with how you decide to play the game with the strategy. I mean, you can run around, I think, and smash the snowbees as quickly as possible, which is probably what most players do. That's what I try to do. But I watched some of those playthrough videos on YouTube, and you can see that there are some players that are good enough where they, I guess, I don't know if it's an understanding of how the AI plays against them or just timing, but if you line up and you can and smash multiple snowbees at once, things like that, you really get a lot of extra bonus points. And so you can play to rack up the bonus points, or you can play against time and try to get your points and bonus that way.
Yeah, there was really no strategy on my part this week. I mean, there was a lot of things that I thought...
It's definitely very frantic.
Yeah, I mean, it happens fast, you know, and there was a pretty big discrepancy in my scores, and we're not quite there yet, but I mean, I had games that ended... like with 300 points.
Right. Yeah. Me too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just so many fast games where, you know, I was trying to either line up those diamonds or do this or do that. And also, on the bonus points, you know, if you finish the round, I mean, there were times on there that I can't even see how that would be achievable. I think the first one is 0 to 19 seconds.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Crazy. And then there was one that I actually did get, which it was flashing and I was all happy with myself. And it's the next to last one, which is if you finish it in 50 to 59 seconds, you get 10 points, 10 bonus points. Right. Which is, I mean, I think that's what you get if you just break an extra ice block or something.
Like that. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. I felt that was more insulting, and I took it personally. And if I see a penguin, I will kick it.
Gosh.
I figure all they right. all know each other, right?
Just get your family thrown out of the zoo.
They'll know what it's for.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about the music here for a second. We talked about the different versions of the game, and one of our listeners wrote in to talk about how he'd heard Popcorn in one version, but when he got MAME, it was playing a different song. And that's because, yes, there were the early versions of Pengo played the Popcorn theme, and it's an 8-bit version, and it's catchy for a little while, and then it's really annoying because it repeats through the entire game. There's no change between levels or anything. And then there are two versions of the ROM that play a similar but different song, and that's the version that song, the one that isn't Popcorn, is the one that ended up in all the home ports, probably because of licensing.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me wishes that I was better at this game, because it feels like it should be a fun game, but that I just suck at. And part of me is grateful that I'm not, because I would have to listen to Popcorn over and over and over again.
I think it's a good example, for me, it's a good example of how delicate that balance is to make a great game. You know, and mm-hmm. you could just have one setting, one variable off just a little bit, and it makes it almost a great game. I mean, it makes it a fun game, and it makes it, you know, and you go, oh, that's a fun little thing to play or whatever. But, you know, I mean, this is obviously a silly comparison, but if you look at, you know, Donkey Kong versus Crazy Kong, okay. obviously, I mean, from, you know, probably 99% of those games are similar. You know what I mean? But, I mean, you just have all these little tiny things that are different that makes one a classic and one crazy
garbage.
Right. And so obviously Pingo's not garbage or anything like that, but just with a little bit of tweaking, I think it would be like a really, really fun game. And the biggest comparison for me was, gosh, and now I'm drawing a blank of what we played. But there was something that we played recently where I loved it so much, I can't remember what it was. but it was something where we were playing it, and I just kept playing it over and over, you know? And this game, when I died, I didn't want to play it anymore. I was usually frustrated, and I didn't, you know, I didn't immediately put in, you know, 10 credits. I would put in one or two and play it, and then I was done with it for a while.
Okay. See, I had a different experience entirely, other than the kind of annoying music that I wish there had been more variation in that, but I really enjoyed this game, and I think that you'll find that a lot of our fans did too, because we had a lot of people actually correctly guess that was this game and write that they loved Pengo, and I don't know that it's top five for me, but it's definitely up there. I had a great time playing it. The colors are bright, you know, the sprites are well animated. I didn't experience a lot of lag playing it. I suck at it, but it's because I'm bad at the game, not because the game is poorly designed. I had a great time playing this.
Yeah, it's just I just couldn't grasp and it's not grasp. I just couldn't master everything. You know what I mean? Like when I would try to get the snowbees, then, you know, this would go bad. Or when I would try to do this, then that would go bad. And I never got to where I thought I was good at it.
It sounds like what I'm hearing from you anyway is that it had a lot of really good elements and it just didn't quite gel for you.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, send your hate mail to Rob.
And maybe the maze part of it, you have to be able to think outside the box. You know what I mean? Like in Donkey Kong.
A little bit,
Definitely where you say, you're watching the barrels and you're like, okay, it could go down this ladder, or this ladder. But I'm not thinking, I could move this ladder over and do this and do something else, you know? So the whole time when I'm looking, like what you said, I would get an ice cube, I would go hide behind it, here comes the snow bees, and I'm going to, you know, get them with the ice cube, and then they all either move around it, or they eat my ice cube when I'm about to kick it at them. And I'm like, well, that didn't work, you know? So it just... maybe if I played it more, I mean, you know, a week or two for a classic game and playing it, you know, here and there, whatever, you get the feel of it. And,
this is really going to suck when your score is going to be so much better than mine.
No, I don't think that's the case. I had one game, but I never broke the high score on the cabinet.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you're safe on this one.
Well, there were several ports of this game, and for some reason it was the Atari systems that for a long time Pengo only showed up on different Atari systems. You had the 5200 got a port, and the 8-bit computers got a port that was pretty much identical to that. The 2600, there's a version which I guess is not as good. I don't really know or care why, because it didn't have one of those. There was a Game Gear port. There was a Mega Drive game and a sequel called... Pepenga Pengo, and then it showed up on later systems as it's part of, like, you know, the classics collections, and there's one of, like, the Sega Memorial collection. Interestingly, there's also a mini game based on Pengo in a Dreamcast game called Sega Gaga, where the goal of the game is to load Dreamcast boxes into a truck by kicking them around. There aren't any enemies, so it's just a matter of moving things around, but the music is very similar to Popcorn.
Huh.
Those, I guess, are the only official ports, the ones I listed there, although there are a ton of, you know, like freeware Windows games that are similar to, the game mechanic is the same, but it looks different, or you're not playing a penguin, that sort of thing.
Maybe I just don't like penguins. Maybe I'm like, I'm a penguist.
There's there is a popular game that was released in 2002 by Brian King called Frostbite Freddy, which is the exact same mechanic, but it's played on a huge board. Each Snowbee has its own personality and AI and has power-ups, and apparently that's a very popular game. If you can find those, released in 2002. And most recently, there's a game called Pengo 3D, released in 2003, and it is bad. Apparently, the game is incredibly difficult to play, not because it was well-designed, but because everything is just so cluttered, and it's impossible to move around and very easy to die quickly.
Interesting. I remember as a kid on the Commodore, I had a game called Chilly Willy, which is, I guess, a Pengo clone. But I haven't played it recently. I mean, I played it back then, so I don't remember how close it was to Pengo, but it was one of those, you know, a third-party rip-off type thing.
Well, interestingly, HardcoreGaming101.net has an article on Pengo, and they're talking about the Commodore 64, and there were a number of clones for some reason just on the Commodore 64. There was one called Petch, and there was one called Bingo Bongo and Percy Penguin and Charlie Penguin and Il Pinguino. So I guess you Commodore types really like this game.
I guess. I don't know why I missed out on everything, but I don't know.
We've talked in the past about the cuttingroomfloor.net, tcrf.net, is that website that documents unused pieces of code, graphics, sound that they found in ROMs and things like that. There is a lengthy, well, not too lengthy, article about Pengo. It talks about hidden credits screens and unused bits of music, and they do mention the different types of music depending on the ROM set. So there's four different ROM sets, and they're all in MAME, so you can play them, I guess, if you want to hear the different types of music. Set 1C was the original, and that's the one that, and Set 1C and 3 have the original popcorn music. Sets 2 and 4 have the replaced music. I don't know why the 2 and 4 and 1 and 3 instead of 1, 2, and 3, 4, but it's, I can't pimp the site enough, I guess. The cuttingroomfloor.net has got some great stuff, and I highly recommend you go check out the article.
Yeah, there's ever since you mentioned it, I've been going through there and just looking up some of the games that I like, and the unused code and unused graphics and stuff that they list is always interesting, and when they have links to the music and stuff, it always makes you wonder why, how that stuff, you know, why they left it in there. But I guess, you know, when it gets down towards the end, if they don't need the space and they've already put it in there, it's not worth taking back out.
Yeah, if they've got, you know, deadlines to meet and they got to get the game out by Friday, it's going to be more about finishing production than removing old code.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Rob, well, we know that you don't particularly care for the game itself. Is the cabinet interesting at all?
You know what? It is, and I think it's just, well, this is what I like about it. It's a complete theme. You know, and when you start talking about later arcade games and conversions and this and that, or even companies that, like when we looked at the Wall Street, you know, it was just a generic cabinet and they would just swap out the innards. But Pinko's a pretty cute little cabinet. I mean, it's that light blue kind of color, you know, so it makes you think of cold and ice, you know, and it has another thing I like about arcade games is when the characters on the marquee and on the side match what's in the game, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you have this Sega marquee with Pingo, and you have these little speed lines going through the logo, and there's kind of a color fade, and then you've got little red penguin and he's pushing an ice cube, so you kind of get an idea of what it's about. And then there's on the side of the cabinet, you've got a big you know, graphic of again the Pingo, the little red penguin, and he's standing on ice and stuff. So it's just a nice theme. I really do like it. You know, I mean, everything's kind of tied together. Even the control panel, you've got you know, your four-way stick, and then you have the little four directions and little pictures of little Pingo running in different directions. So but yeah, I did like the cabinet.
Now, if I wanted to run out and buy one of these to add to my own collection, would this be something I could pick up easily and cheap?
Relatively. I mean, it's higher than some of the games that we've looked at. The Exidy's price guide says that you should be able to find one for $300 to $400, and that's for a dedicated upright. I checked eBay, and there were several that were listed on there. I think there's three different ones that are listed with buy it nows of $500, and then there's one with a buy it now of $389, but I'm always leery. It says in the title, it says used parts repair something broken. Else. So yeah, but all the ones that are $500, you know, say that they work 100% and everything. I you know, it's a little higher than some of the generic ones that we've talked about, but that's not out of the range. And like anything else, you never know what you're really going to pay. I mean, you go to an auction, you go online, and you could find one, you know, perhaps a lot more inexpensive than that.
Now, here's a question for a collector who knows more than I do about it, and maybe you can answer. Is there a way to tell by either looking at the cabinet or the boards itself to know which, like if I want the popcorn version that everyone seems to like so much, is there a way to tell which one I'm getting unless somebody tells me?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know of any difference in the cabinets. Some machines, when they boot up, will have like a version number, you know, like it'll say something, or if they have a setup you can go into. Mm-hmm. But you'd definitely have to be either hands-on or have somebody that was cooperating at the other side, you know what I mean, to test that for you. That's a good question, though. Without actually putting your hands on one, I don't know how you'd be able to tell that.
Hmm. Okay, well, Pengo, like I said, was published by Sega in 1982. It was developed by a company called Coreland. features a Z80 at 3.072 megahertz and a Namco sound chip at 96 kilohertz, 288 by 224 resolution vertically. And so pretty simple game and it's not, definitely doesn't have a lot of processing power behind it, but for all the action and the music and stuff that's going on the screen, I never noticed any slowdown or jitters or other problems. You know, one of the things that we like to complain about here on the show is if, you know, when we die unnecessarily, or it feels like the game is cheating because, you know, like I was clearly at least 8 pixels away from that thing, you know, and I ended up dead. You know, when I died in this game, I died because I didn't know what I was doing and the snowbees caught me.
Yeah, it was, usually I felt like it was something I had done. I just wasn't either fast enough or something, you know, to think far enough ahead to figure out what I should have been doing.
Sure. Okay, so this is a game that I think it's just, what, a four-way joystick and one button? So it's certainly not a game where you have to go out and buy the cabinet unless you're just a huge collector, because it plays just fine in MAME.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of cabinets, it did come also in a tabletop one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Sega had both the sit-down cocktail cabinets, you know, and the stand-up one. Now, the cocktail one is more of the generic Sega. I don't think it was the same theme, you know, like on the stand-up Pingo is blue and has all those graphics and stuff. And I think the sit-down one, the ones that I was able to find, just had, you know, the typical wood panel look on the sides with some Pingo graphics on top. But in fact, and maybe we'll post one of these on the Facebook page, but on the arcade flyers, they have specific on the flyers, they show both versions of the cabinet, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll make sure to hunt that down and get that up on the Facebook page then.
Boy, you sure do like healthy cereal. And this video arcade game I want. The real thing?
You too could win a
Super Mega!
Or Star Trek.
Wow.
Or Pango.
Wow.
Video arcade game. The magic motion poster and screen that tell you if you've won are in specially marked boxes of Habsies. For a free poster and screen, write Habsies, Box 7922, Chicago, Illinois, 60680. Chance to win is 1 in 13,000, and Habsies makes it fun to try.
All right. So, any last minute thoughts other than you know, I apparently like this game a lot more than you did.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. You know, I don't want to make it. I just hate penguins. I don't know. There was something about it. There was just like one too many variables for me.
Okay.
Going on. You know what I mean? Just one too many things, and that's probably. Less on the game and more maybe on my own game playing skills. I think it's a good game. And I think, you know, a lot of times we talk about, for me, this is almost like the Goldilocks, where some of the cabinets we say, well, it seems like this game, you know, wasn't as advanced as it should have been by the year it was released. And sometimes they seem, you know, better than the year or whatever. But to me, this seems exactly 1982. You know what I mean? It's the year it came out. It's, you're going to get those cute 8-bit graphics. You're going to get 8-bit music, you know, simple four-way joystick gameplay with one button. I mean, it's just that. It's not progressive, but it's not, you know, sometimes we've seen games that seem like the graphics are really outdated or behind the times or something. But no, I mean, this is, when I look at this game, that's that era of games that I think about.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, Rob, how'd you do?
My best game was 18930, which is not even enough to beat the default high score of 20,000 on the game. And I even looked and it says you can get an extra penguin at 50,000. That never, ever would happen in my lifetime. And on the 18,000 game that I scored, I think that is the one also where I lined up the diamonds. Most of the time, there were lots of games, like I said, when I played, where I only scored like 300 points, 400, 500 points, 1,200, you know, and I would just stop and regroup and then go try to play again. But on that one game, it just seemed like I was going through and for whatever reason was able to squish the snowbees.
Well, prepare to gloat, I guess. No. I didn't even get 18,000. The best I did was 17.
What?
I told you I'm bad at this game. I like it, but I'm bad. The best I did was 17,440 points.
What?
Get it out of your system. Come on.
Hold on. I'm talking to my penguin people right now. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, you know what? I mean, if I hadn't lined up the diamonds on that one, really my score would have been what I think you get 5,000 if you line them up on a wall or something, or maybe something it was like one that. Over. I think it's 5,000 if they're on the wall and 10,000 if they're in the middle of a play field. And I honestly don't remember which one I did on that game, but if it hadn't been for that bonus, that was probably one of two or three games where I broke the 10,000 score point. I mean, my average would have been in the 7,000 to 8,000 maybe. And that was when I was doing good.
Yeah. This is a tough game because as fast as you feel that you need to move, there's definitely a strategy about, you know, knowing how the snowbees are going to come after you, remembering that they can just chew through the ice next to you. And they know that you're on the other side of the ice. So it's not like you're hiding and stuff.
Right. Yeah. That's one thing where,
it's hard.
I did try to do that. And now that you mentioned that, like I would hide on the other side of an ice cube and wait for them, you know, to come towards me, and then they would just go around me. So they do have some interesting AI built in, and I'm not sure that I ever fully understood how they worked, but I don't know. It's not my top 10. I don't know that it's in my top anything, but I appreciate it for what it is. So I didn't hate it. I just didn't connect to it for whatever reason.
All right. Well, maybe next week's game will be in your top 10, Rob.
All right. I hope it doesn't have penguins in it again.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't, but it does have this.
Laser gun.
Okay. Well, that doesn't sound like penguins.
No, not penguins at all. So, all right. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in and listening again. We apologize for the delay there, but some of us, I guess, have families or something and like want to actually take time off. I don't know.
It happens.
All right. Well, thanks, Rob.
All right, man.
Have a good one.